What up, super friends? Isela here. No rapping for me. Last time I tried that, I got strangely misogynistic. Sorry, getting off topic. In response to the really kind people who've reached out asking how they can support us, we've set up a Patreon. We're so legit now. One might say we're too legit to quit. We know subscriptions are sucky, but we've made it super easy to sign up. And best of all, it is dirt cheap, y'all. Only $2 a month. You can't even buy a single Savage Smoked Slim Jim for that money. For $2, you'll get our episodes a week early and ad-free. Also, we're going to send you some fun and cool stickers a few times a year, along with a shout-out during one of our episodes. You will be known to us as the most super of our super friends. Link is in the show notes, or check us out on patreon.com/technicallyaconversation.
From her induction into the Billboard Latin Music Hall of Fame to the establishment of the Selena Museum in Corpus Christi, Texas, Selena's influence continues to be as strong as ever. Her impact on Latin music, fashion, and culture is undeniable, and her memory lives on through her music, which continues to inspire new generations of fans. With the recent release of Oxygen's documentary, Selena and Yolanda, The Secrets Between Them, there are new allegations as to why this young star was taken away from us so soon in a horrific chain of events. Listen along as we remember Selena's legacy, as we touch on Selena's rise to stardom, her life that was cut way too short, and the conspiracies behind her death on the 29th anniversary of Selena's murder, here on Technically a Conversation. Greetings. You're listening to Technically a Conversation, a podcast where we share an interesting topic or story with each other in the hopes you find it interesting also. I'm one third of your hosts, Elena, and I'm joined, as always, by my Tejano brother, Jose. How's everything going?
I'm doing great. Nobody's as Tejano as I am.
That's right.
Even though I'm from New Mexico.
You're not from New Mexico. That's where you live now.
Well, I've been living here for, what, like 14 years now? So I'm officially a New Mexican now.
Is that what you consider yourself then?
I do. That's what I identify with.
Oh.
With all my raza here from Sunland Park.
Ah, bueno pues. I stand corrected. Well, the last time I was on, I was just going back to days, and now I'm going back to nights. So welcome to my crazy life. So did you hear about SpaceX's launch last week?
I did, because you shared a reel with me.
I did. No, that was like 2 days ago. The one that was at night, the nighttime one?
Yes.
Yeah. No, this was last week.
I don't know. I feel like I saw something that you posted on it. But like, I feel like whenever I look at your posts, it's like a documentary of your life. So I feel like
it is.
I feel like I was there with you when you were watching that.
Yeah, so I actually had no idea that the launch was going to happen. We went to South Padre for a week during spring break. And by we, I mean my friend Nicole and I. Anyway, she's my ride or die. We were traveling to our resort. And on our way there, I met this taxi cab driver who became my friend. Aye, aye. And it was on the metro on the way to the resort. Anyway, he was telling me about the launch and that it was going to be on Thursday morning. And I was like, what? I didn't know anything about this. He goes, yeah, it's really cool. It makes everything shake. It's really loud, blah, blah, blah. So my friend Nicole and I, we made it a point to wake up early last Thursday morning. And we were out in our balcony and we were in awe when that SpaceX Starship rocket launched right before our eyes. Like, we were like 5 miles away tops.
Oh, wow.
Yes, the coolest thing I've ever seen in my entire life. It was so loud that, looking back in retrospect, I'm like, damn, we should have worn, because Nicole, for whatever reason, had earplugs. So I was like, man, maybe we should have worn them, because I was like, nah, we don't need them. And then I'm like trying to record the launch. And I'm like covering my other ear. But I was like so freaked out by the sound and everything that I forgot to hit record. So the video that's on my Instagram is actually Nicole's video.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. She did a much better job. But it's because I was all startled. I'm surprised I didn't drop my phone on the people below me. But it was so cool.
Yeah, if I would have been there, I would have totally gone to go see it as well. I don't know, now that since I'm working from the office, I feel like I don't know what's going on in the world anymore. Because before, I would watch the news, the 12 o'clock news. So while I was working, I mean, I wasn't really watching it, but I would be listening to it. So I felt like I was informed and I knew what was going on with, you know, everything. And I mean, unless it's covered on the Daily Zeitgeist, that's like my news now. Like, I usually don't know what's going on. So yeah, I hadn't even heard about it.
Yeah, I don't even, I mean, I never watch the news, so I never really know what's going on. But I was lucky that that guy told me about it. And then like further on throughout the week, people kept asking us, like, are you guys going to watch the launch? Are you guys going to watch the launch? And I'm like, of course. And it was cool because like right across from us, there was a Days Inn and they had like a launch party on top of their rooftop.
Oh, how cool.
Yeah, it was so cool. So I'm listening to the live stream on YouTube for the countdown. But of course, it was like a 20-second delay. So I hear the people across from us going, 5, 4, 3, 2. And I was like, what's going on? But it was cool. That's why I wasn't ready to record and, you know, whatever. I was like adrenaline pumping afterwards. We forgot we were tired. And then we went on with our day. But it was something really cool. And if you ever have the chance to see it, I totally recommend it. It was just amazing.
I'm really glad that you got to experience that.
Me too.
Like, I think anything that has to do with space, like, it's unbelievable. I mean, you can see pictures, you can watch stuff on YouTube, but when you see shit, like, with your own eyes, like, I want to say maybe, fuck, I don't even know how long ago it was, maybe like 10 years ago, Isela and I went to the McDonald Observatory in Fort Hancock, and you know, you're there looking through a telescope and you're looking like at Saturn, you know, like you're not watching it on TV or pictures, like you're actually watching it or seeing it with your own eyes. And it's like super breathtaking. Like, it's very like humbling. You realize what a small part of like this whole universe that you really are.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
It's amazing. People haven't seen that or had an opportunity to go to an observatory to see something like that. I highly recommend it. It's definitely worth your time and however much they charge you to go see it.
Yeah, I definitely want to go. I think Antonio was telling me that he has like a former student that works at an observatory somewhere. I don't remember where, but I was like, oh my gosh, well, we got to go.
There's one also on the Valle Verde campus,
mm-hmm,
for El Paso Community College, for those that aren't familiar with the area. But when I took astronomy at community college, we got to go out there to the observatory and it was super awesome.
Oh, that's cool. And they allow anybody to go or just the students?
That I do not know. But I'm sure that, you know, that those things aren't cheap, you know? So I'm sure that they probably do have events that, you know, they'll probably charge you like $5 or something just to go in there, I guess, to try and recuperate however much they spend on building that.
Makes sense. Well, anyway, enough with the small talk because this one's going to be a long one, or at least I think it's going to, unless you want to continue talking about space.
Well, I always love talking about space, but I think we should get on with it.
All right. So those super duper special ass friends that are getting this episode a week early, this might sound a little silly, but for all our other super friends that are listening to this episode on April 1st, Jose, pop quiz hotshot, what is the significance of yesterday's date? O sea, March 31st.
Well, I think you're a little bit off, Elena, because this episode will be coming out on April 8th. So,
no, I thought it was April 1st.
No, the April 1st episode is actually the Edgar Cayce episode. And actually, I should probably apologize for that one because I was so tired when we recorded it. When I did the script for it, like, I didn't record like any like small talk or anything. I always like to do like the Taylor Swift conspiracy theories. And then since I didn't have a chance to review the script, you know, it was just pretty much the introduction. And I was like, well, I've got nothing. Let's get started. So it felt like super awkward. But yeah, this episode is coming out on April 8th. But our super friends, our patrons, will be getting it on April 1st.
Oh, okay. Well, then it doesn't sound weird to them. It'll sound weird to everybody else.
But to answer your question, aside from there being an episode of Last Week Tonight on March the 31st, it's also Easter Sunday.
Yeah, well, how about I give you March 31st, 1995?
I don't know if it was Easter Sunday that day.
Okay. All right, well, today's episode is going to be about none other than an icon that I grew up listening to. Unfortunately, her life was cut short just as she was making waves and starting on her crossover album. She is most often referred to as the Queen of Tejano, but she was much more than that. A beautiful person who needs no introduction but deserves one, Selena Quintanilla Perez. You didn't get that when I called you a Tejano?
Well, I kind of imagined when you said a Tejano artist whose life got cut short. At first, I didn't know where you were going with that. I thought you were going to talk about Celine Dion, but then I was like, oh, no, I don't think she did Tejano.
Celine Dion? She's still living, too. Acanijos.
Yeah, no, I'm totally kidding. But no, I do remember you listening to her nonstop pretty much when we were kids.
Yeah, so besides all those songs that I played on repeat, how familiar are you with the Queen of Tejano?
Well, I feel like I've listened to all her catalog because of you. So I'm pretty familiar, but that's not something that I normally listen to since I'm not big into Tejano music. But yeah, I mean, I would say I'm about average as far as like a Mexican, about average in my familiarity with her material.
Alrighty. Well, we're not only going to talk about that, but we're also going to get into the speculations and myths surrounding her death. And before we go into that, I'll just talk about a little bit more about Selena and what made her incredibly unique and spectacular. Side note, remember when Vanessa, Monica, and I would drag you and Ruben into our music videos that we would record?
It was mainly Ruben because he was the one.
Yeah, it was mainly Ruben.
Yeah, he was. Well, first of all, he's better looking than I am. You really don't want a video with me in it.
Whatever.
But I think he was more agreeable and I was more like, nah, fam, I'm good. I'm good.
Yeah, it seems like ages ago. I have the tape somewhere, but I can't bring myself to rewatch them. Honestly, there is so much information out there about Selena, and I can probably have an entire season of just Selena episodes, but we are going to do the SparkNotes version today. Do you remember SparkNotes, Jose?
That was the Great Value Cliff Notes.
Yeah, it was the cheaper version. But for those of our super friends that may not be familiar with Cliff Notes or Spark Notes, what was it to us?
Well, it's kind of like when you're asked to do a book report on something and you're too lazy to read the actual book. What kids would probably do now is go to Wikipedia and find out what the book is about. Well, we didn't have Wikipedia growing up, so we would have to not rant, but I guess like borrow or check out those Cliff Notes. And if a book was maybe like 100 pages, like this would summarize it in like 50 or maybe less or something. So
yes,
it was kind of a cheat code to, yeah. To not read a book.
Yeah. So like back in our days, we had actual books where we would read these books in order to do research. Luckily, everything's found on the interwebs now, so I don't need a library card to go check out a bunch of books. Although I did, in fact, read a book for research on this topic. Irma, thank you so much for lending me the book To Selena with Love by Chris Perez. That kept me company during my travels. Anyway, back to Selena.
Going back to what you just said, though,
yeah,
that's so wild because I don't even think that this podcast would be possible. Well, first of all, it wouldn't be possible without the internet because we record through the internet. But second, you know, just the amount of research that we do, like sometimes I spend like 3 or 4 days researching a topic. I can't imagine having to go get in my car, drive to the library, get like encyclopedias and like write shit down and take notes. Like, I don't even think that this podcast would be possible if it wasn't for the internet. So things are so much easier now than they were.
That's very true. Good point. Yeah, I was just thinking, imagine having to go to the library and like, here's my little library card. Then you come home with like 10 books. And then you have to have the time to read all those books. Like, imagine? Oh, heck no.
Yeah, no. This podcast would not exist if we were back in the 90s.
Oh, yeah. No, no, no. So now, anyway, back to Selena.
Yes.
According to biography.com, This and all sources will be linked in our show notes.
Show notes.
Selena Quintanilla Perez, or simply known as Selena, was born in Lake Jackson, Texas on April 16, 1971. Selena's controlling father, Selena's father, Abraham Quintanilla Jr., was also a former musician. He, along with his wife, Marcela Zamora Quintanilla, who was a homemaker, had two older children, Abby and Suzette. Eventually, they would open a restaurant in their hometown of a Mexican-style cuisine. Selena's primary language was English, but her father taught her to sing in Spanish to be closer to her Mexican roots. She learned the lyrics phonetically, but eventually started picking up on the language. By the age of 10, Selena became the lead singer in her family's band that her father named Selena y los Dinos, a nod to Abraham's old band, Los Dinos, from when Abraham used to play as a young adult in the 60s. Selena joined siblings Suzette on the drums and Abraham III, referred to as AB, on the bass guitar. Their unique Tejano style incorporated several genres such as Mexican, country, and Western music. Selena's breakthrough came in the late 1980s when she signed with EMI Latin and released her self-titled debut album in 1989. Her unique blend of Tejano music with influences of pop, cumbia, and ranchera captured the hearts of fans across the globe. Songs like Como La Flor and Biri Biri Bam Bam became instant classics, earning Selena recognition as the queen of Tejano music.
Oh, so those songs were already on her debut album?
Well, her earlier career, no, but like the debut album that actually put her on the map, yes.
Oh, wow.
I think that's what they're referring to, yeah.
Yeah, because those songs were bangers, as the kids say.
They are. Selena's success continued to soar throughout the early 1990s. On April 2nd, 1992, Selena eloped with the love of her life and also the guitarist in her band, Chris Perez, against her father's wishes. They were young and in love, and Selena was determined to spend the rest of her life with Chris. In 1993, the release of the album Live won her a Grammy, and Selena became the first female Tejano artist to win this prestigious award. She was just on the brink of crossing over into the English language market with her crossover album, which sadly never came to fruition. Tragically, Selena's life was cut short on March 31st, 1995, when she was fatally shot by the president of her fan club, Yolanda Saldivar, at the age of 23 at a Days Inn motel. Her untimely death sent shockwaves through the music industry and sparked an outpouring of grief from fans worldwide. Selena's legacy, however, continues to thrive. And I think that this would be a great time for a break before I break into tears. When we return, we'll talk about the tragic end for this queen and then go into some of the controversial topics out there about her death.
Hi, I'm Abby, and this is Alan.
Hello.
We're from the Lunatics Radio Hour podcast, where we explore the history of horror and modern horror storytelling.
We do deep dives into legends like ghost trains, or the Headless Horseman, or Wendigos.
Available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Including cell phones and computers.
Join us on the Unseen Paranormal Podcast as we dive into the history, hauntings, and high strangeness of the world to try to better understand the paranormal. I will be your guide. I am paranormal researcher and investigator Eric Freeman Sims. Tune in to the Unseen Paranormal Podcast for new episodes every Wednesday as we welcome authors, historians, researchers, investigators, and various other guests to explore our unseen world and the unexplainable. All current and past episodes are available anywhere you get your music or podcasts. And remember, some of the scariest things are unseen.
Hello and welcome to Myth Monsters. I'm Erin, a self-confessed mythology addict and occasionally scholar. Myth Monsters focuses on the monsters of global folklore and mythology, with sometimes a cryptid thrown in once or twice. We go from looking at jackalopes to gorgons to wendigos to Bigfoot, from dwarves to elves, and honestly, everything in between. Why should I listen to this podcast over any other mythology podcast out there? Well, we're only 15 to 20 minutes long, so we're perfect in time for your little commute. And also, we focus on a different culture and monster every single week. A real in-depth look into modern media, where they're found in films, TV, video games, and books, and also the origin, description, and if I believe they existed. So it's perfect for any short trips or if you're into any specific monsters that you fancy. So come join the fun every Thursday and stay spooky, babes.
And we're back.
We're back.
Well, say, how was your break? Did you break out into any of Selena's cumbias?
Oh, you bet I did, girl.
I know, I saw those moves. You were shaking it.
I was trying to get her spin down.
You should do the washer machine.
That was going to be my next move, but the commercials ran out.
Oh, I see.
But going back to what you were saying earlier about wanting to take the break before you broke down.
Yeah.
I'm actually surprised by how well you've kept it together, because during the Misfits episode, I kept on tearing up and and almost breaking down a couple of times. So
funny story is that every time I would rehearse this, I would start to cry and I'm like, oh my God. So I'm trying so hard not to. But yeah, I think I broke down like three times. Yeah. So if you hear my voice cracking, which I've been hearing it, I'm like, trying to stifle it. All right. Well, this part might be a little bit longer because I think it's going to allow for a lot of conversation. So before the break, I gave you a brief synopsis of Selena's short-lived life. There are so many versions of Selena's tragic murder out there. I'm going to bring up the most common ones, and some of them are a little controversial. So the first one I have is that Yolanda claims that when she shot Selena by accident, she alleged that the gun just went off. That was in her words. It just went off. What do you think about this claim, Jose?
I don't really buy it, because guns normally don't just go off unless it's a kid playing with it.
Yeah, exactly, right? So this by far is one of the most controversial statements out there. And then one of the later ones that I'm going to go into will be the other controversial one. According to a Days Inn employee who was a witness to Selena running out of the room after she heard the gunshot, she alleges that Yolanda ran out after Selena with the gun pointing towards her and yelled, "Bitch," and then she put the gun down. Because I guess she was going to fire another shot, but Selena ran away, and I guess maybe she was out of range for her. So then she yelled out, "Bitch," and then she put the gun down. So for the prosecution, this meant intent. And I like what the DA, Carlos Valdez, says. She wasn't pointing a glass of water at her. She was pointing a gun at her. She knows what a gun does.
Yeah, of course. And just the fact that she had the gun with her, I feel that that's intent. Because it's also Texas. And Texas, everybody carries guns. But most sane individuals don't normally carry a gun unless they intend on using it.
Exactly, right? Some people use it for protection, but you're still with the intent of using it in case you need to protect yourself.
I just carry one because I think it makes me look cool.
You do not, liar.
No, I'm super anti-gun, if y'all couldn't tell from most of our episodes.
Yeah. Okay, this is point number two. If she didn't intend to shoot Selena, why even have a gun with her, which is what we were just discussing? In Chris's book and the Oxygen show, Selena and Yolanda, The Secrets Between Them, Yolanda claims to have purchased the gun for protection from Abraham, Abraham being the father. She also alleges that Abraham was having her followed and didn't feel safe. Selena learns of this gun and tells Yolanda to return it, which she does. But days later, she goes back for it and even goes to a shooting range. According to Chris's book, Yolanda bought the gun because she confided to a fellow employee that she was a private nurse and that some family members of a patient had threatened her. She bought the gun for protection. But wait, I thought she was threatened by Abraham. So now even her patients' families are threatening her too? Are we sensing a pattern? To me, it kind of sounds like she's one of those people that thinks that the whole world is against them.
Yeah, I know several people like that. I just think that she can't keep up with her lie, or she modifies her lie to fit whatever scenario she's in or I don't know. I know people that are like that, that their lies seem to evolve.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. This exactly her. So according to a Days Inn staff, after the room was cleared from investigation, they located Yolanda's purse in the safe. Wouldn't you think that the gun would have been in the safe or in her purse? I mean, she knew that that Selena was going to visit her. And even though she didn't know she was going to visit, because she says Yolanda claims that she just showed up, the gun was still out. So why would her purse be in the safe and the gun is out? Like, was she now threatened by Selena too?
Well, because she's in Texas, and since everybody in Texas has a gun, she has to carry one also just for her own protection. So I kind of agree with her on that.
Sure.
Now, from what I heard, Selena had told her that she was going over because, I don't know if it's true or not, but there was like a reason to suspect that she was stealing money from her. So I think that's why she was going to confront her.
Yeah, well, they actually had the meeting about the embezzlement a couple of weeks, I want to say, before this happened.
Oh, okay.
So this was for a different reason of why Selena was going over there, which I do get into a little bit later, or maybe right here, actually. So do you want to know what was found in her purse, Jose?
She probably had some rainbow fentanyl.
I think this was before fentanyl was cool.
Oh, okay.
Or invented. I don't know.
She probably had cocaine. That seems like some...
No.
Oh, I don't know then.
No. She had her resignation letter, supposedly. It was... the resignation was found in her purse. And Yolanda's family states that Selena was not going to fire her because she had already resigned. But how can you resign if the letter's still in her purse?
I think that she wanted to resign, but Selena wouldn't take that. She didn't want to let go of Yolanda Saldivar or whatever, Saldivar.
Saldivar.
So the only way that she could get out of that work relationship was by killing Selena.
Oh, by killing her or giving her her resignation letter?
Well, she tried to give her the resignation letter, but Selena wouldn't accept it. You're too valuable of an employee for me to let you go, Yolanda.
Well, according to Yolanda's family, they claim that she did turn it into Selena, but she didn't accept it. But Chris states in his book that Selena was indeed going to fire Yolanda after she got the paperwork she needed for the taxes. So that was the reason why she was going to go see her at the motel, because of the missing paperwork. So before she actually fired Yolanda, she wanted to get on her good side, get the paperwork, and then fire her.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. The family defends Yolanda by stating that she already had another job lined up and that she indeed resigned, so Selena could not fire her. But we all know that Yolanda already had a side gig as a home nurse because, remember, she was being threatened by the family members. So that proves nothing to me.
Maybe she confused Selena for one of the family members of the patients that she was taking care of.
Highly doubtful.
Just playing the devil's advocate.
I'm pretty sure she would not confuse Selena.
You're probably right, yeah.
All right, point number three. If Selena thought that the gun accidentally discharged, then why did she run away from Yolanda? Selena ran for her life. She ran away from a registered nurse who could have performed life-saving measures right then and there.
That's a very good point. I didn't know that she was a registered nurse, so that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, so if the gun accidentally went off as she claimed, sure, you might be in shock, but then I assume the adrenaline kicks in and you perform life-saving measures, such as a tourniquet to stop the bleeding. Instead, Selena ran for her life away from Yolanda. She collapsed in the Days Inn lobby floor and told staff, Yolanda Saldivar in room 158. Here's the 911 call.
What is your location? Days Inn Motel, it's 901 Navigation Boulevard.
What's wrong, ma'am?
We have a woman ran in the lobby, said she's been shot. She's laying on the floor and there's blood.
Okay, what room number? Okay.
Where are you?
What room?
How old is she? She looks about 20.
Okay, who saw her? Where is
she? She's in the lobby right now? Yes, ma'am. She just passed out.
Okay. Still there?
I already have to call in. I think you need to send a police unit, too. It'll go off on me. Okay. get us some information so we can get the suspect.
Okay. You don't know anything else about who might have done it or anything like that?
It's another lady. That's all I know. We're trying to find out.
And that, okay, and this lady's about 40 years old?
20.
20. Okay.
Yeah. Yolanda? She's a suspect?
Oh, okay, ma'am. Thank you.
This 911 emergency.
We need a police officer. Someone's been shot over here at Navigation. Days Inn?
At Days Inn?
Yes.
Okay, what room number?
She got me on the bus lot, 158.
Okay, who shot her?
The lady in 158 shot the lady over here.
Okay, is the lady in 158 still there?
I don't know. They shot somebody. She's taking off.
She's with a vehicle on foot?
She's in a vehicle on foot. They don't know.
Well, we need to summon, somebody can give us some information so we can get the suspect. I've already got the ambulance and the police over there. Okay. They're en route. I need a car.
I need a race car.
What does she look like?
Sad, huh?
Yeah, that's so sad. That's so fucked up.
So this leads me to point number four. Yolanda coaxes Selena over to the Days Inn to supposedly give Selena the paperwork she had been requesting. In the book, Selena with Love, Chris offers to take Selena to the motel because she didn't want her going by herself at night. Chris stays in the truck at the behest of Yolanda. Selena assures Chris that it should be fine and that she might be willing to tell her the truth if she's on her own. After what seemed like a long while, Chris follows the path towards room 158. There, the door to the room is opened a crack, and he sees Yolanda sitting on the bed crying. Chris asks if everything is okay, and Selena says it is. She turns towards the door and walks away with Chris towards their truck. He recalls that Selena was fuming that Yolanda hadn't given her all the paperwork, as she had claimed that she would, and wanted to head back for them. Chris told Selena that she probably didn't even have the paperwork and that she was just making up stories as she always did. Selena agreed and they proceeded home. The very next morning, Selena left her home early while Chris slept. She takes Yolanda to the emergency room and examination. The nurse and the doctor who examined her that morning claimed that there was no signs of sexual assault. They were under oath in a courtroom when they said this. In the recent documentary, the story changes from being sexually assaulted in Mexico to being physically assaulted in a bathroom at a Whataburger in Texas after crossing the Mexican border. Yolanda's family further states that a letter was written to Yolanda while being incarcerated and sent to her there in prison, confirming this assault. But I have so many questions. How can we even prove the validity of this letter?
Oh, hold on, I'm confused. So who was sexually assaulted, Yolanda or Selena?
Oh, sorry, I missed a part there. Yolanda claimed that she was sexually assaulted, and that was the reason why she was crying in the motel room.
By Chris or by Selena?
No, she was sexually assaulted in Mexico.
Oh, okay.
So she had gone on a trip to Mexico for Selena, and on the way back, she was sexually assaulted somewhere in Mexico. Or, well, on the way back, because her story changes. She says she was sexually assaulted in Mexico, and then later she says, on the way back, in Texas, when they stopped at a Whataburger, she's sexually assaulted in... No, she doesn't say sexually assaulted anymore. She says she's only assaulted in the bathroom of a Whataburger. So the reason why Selena went over the next day was to get the paperwork and to take her to the emergency room so that she could get one of those rape kits done on her, since the previous night she had claimed that she had been sexually assaulted in Mexico.
Oh, okay, got it.
Yeah. Sorry, I missed a part there. My bad. When I was going over it, I was like, oh, shoot, I forgot to put why she was crying. So when Selena and Chris got back in the truck and they were driving home, Selena tells Chris, Yolanda told me that she was sexually assaulted in Mexico. And then she also says, oh, she didn't give me all the paperwork either. Let's go back and get it. And Chris says, no, she's just lying to you. Like, let's just go. Then she goes the next day to take her to the ER so she can get that exam done and get the paperwork.
Okay, got it. Okay, that makes more sense now.
Yeah, my bad. Here is a clip on Yolanda and her family speaking about the assault and the letter she received in prison. Episode 2, Room 158 from Oxygen's documentary, Selena and Yolanda, The Secrets Between Them.
Gone back to Mexico on a business trip. She felt so uncomfortable that she took her older sister with her. And on the way back, they stopped at a Whataburger, I believe it was. And Yolanda went in to get some food.
It was around 8 o'clock in the morning. So I went in there and I ordered I went to the bathroom and I was washing my hands. So these men, I had no idea who they were. They started pushing me against the mirror. I said, what do y'all want? And just one of them just hit me right here and pushed me around and I almost fell. I didn't know what they were after. I did not know, you know, if they were going to kill me or they were going to take me. You know, all those things were coming to my mind. And I guess somebody heard that it was rambling inside the restroom and I was yelling that they ran out. And so, oh my God, I started feeling shaky and I didn't know what was happening. And so I left. I didn't even pick up the stuff. And I got in the car and I just told my sister, let's go, we have to go, we have to go. And she said, what happened? And I said, I just got assaulted. We just have to go, we just have to go.
Yolanda says that when she was in Mexico, she was beaten up by two men.
As far as specifics, according to Yolanda, it was two men after. Was it two men in the blue car? Was it two men sent by Abraham? We don't know.
I mean, she was saying, two men beat me up. Well, she still had her fancy briefcase with her. They didn't steal her car. It was just not believable.
For many years, there was no proof this assault happened. You had to take Yolanda at her word. But then there was a letter that popped up.
I'm trying to remember who this was from.
Oh, that is very interesting. That's a letter that she got in prison from...
Is this Lorenzo? Yes. I think it's Lorenzo.
This is Lorenzo. The letter that Yolanda received was from Lorenzo Salinas, who was Dr. Martinez's personal chauffeur, indicating that attack did happen, and it was the doctor who ordered it. Oh, yeah, so he says right here, él me dijo que tú ibas a venir a Monterrey la semana del 31 de marzo. Él dijo que ocupara a unos hombres para que te asaltaran, para que tú no suspecharas nada. And so that's what she's been saying all along, like, somebody beat me up. To this day, people don't believe that she was attacked, or people say that she made it up. Although this guy is saying, I'm the one who hired those guys. So it happened.
This letter kind of throws another wrench into what we believe actually happened. You know, it's not just Abraham's going to get her, but Dr. Martinez is going to get her. Which raised the question, why would Dr. Martinez want to attack Yolanda? Why would he want to go after her?
Yolanda believes that the doctor viewed her as a threat to his relationship with Selena, and that Yolanda might have the power for Selena to end that relationship.
So that doesn't make any sense to me. Well, first of all, have you noticed that everybody's against her still?
Yeah, it sounds like she suffers from delusions of persecution.
Yeah, exactly. So if you didn't know, this Dr. Lorenzo, or whatever his name is, Lorenzo, I think, was the chauffeur. The doctor, he's the plastic surgeon that she was claiming Selena was having an affair with in Monterrey. And that was the reason why they were traveling to Monterrey so much, because Selena was having an affair and she was going out there with her. But then again, she contradicts herself in the documentary saying she's going to Monterrey back and forth by herself. So first of all, Selena's not even going with her on these trips. Selena's sending her on these trips. Second of all, how can she think that the doctor is threatened by Yolanda if Yolanda is allowing this supposed affair to happen? He should have seen her more as an ally and not a threat. I mean, that doesn't make any sense to me at all.
Maybe since Selena wasn't going out there to have the affair with the doctor, she was sending Yolanda as her proxy. So Yolanda was having the affair for Selena, since Selena wasn't able to go personally.
Ay, guacala. So maybe the surgeon was the one who sexually assaulted her.
Maybe, maybe.
That actually makes more sense than the lies and bullshit that Yolanda comes up with.
And it was something I made up like in 2 seconds right now.
Yeah. And then even Antonio was like, hi, and then the chauffeur's name is Lorenzo Salinas. Like, they couldn't even be more freaking, I don't know, like, it was just, he thought it was just too close of a coincidence that her name is Selena and this guy's last name is Salinas. Like, he was like, they couldn't think of a better last name or what.
Do you know if this person even exists, or that person only exists in Yolanda's mind?
I think that person only exists in Yolanda's mind and her family's mind. I actually don't know if this Lorenzo Salinas exists. I didn't go that far into it, which now I want to. But I do know that the plastic surgeon does exist. And right now, I can't think of his name, but he had come out in an interview denying the allegations that he was only a business partner, because Selena was wanting to open up her boutique in Mexico. And he was going to be like the angel or whatever that donates the money so that she can...
Oh, the angel investor?
Yeah, the angel investor to get the business going. And so he claims that Yolanda was crazy and that there was no such thing as an affair, that he just admired her, believed in her work, and was just going to invest in her boutique so that she can get it up and running over there. And then later on, he's interviewed, I want to say like in 2012, he later on says, yes, we were very much in love. And yes, we were going to run away together or whatever. I would have dropped anything for her. Well, one thing is saying, yes, I did love her. And yes, I would have dropped anything for her. And another is we were in love and we were going to run away together. So he kind of goes back and forth in his, the way he's phrasing it. But it sounds more like he was the one that was obsessed or in love with her more than her. I think she saw him as like just an adult father figure, because I think her father was the one who introduced them.
Maybe. Coincidentally, his name was Alberto Yolandes.
Stupid. So since we were saying that Yolanda is a little bit of a nut job, there was an interview done in 2020. I would try to look for the interviewer's name and I couldn't find it. I'm sure if I dug a little bit better, I would have found it. I just was pressed for time. But the soundbite La La Land, it's a observation that she made when she was interviewing Yolanda Saldivar.
Well, certainly. Sure, I would have helped her.
And then, before it's over, Yolanda goes back to what she did.
This world is just passing on, you know. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. I'll see her again. I'll tell her I'm sorry, Selena.
It was almost like she still had that same obsession with Selena and was in denial over, you know, what happened in that motel room. And it's like she blocked out those 8 seconds, blocked out when someone pulled the trigger, when she pulled the trigger. It was like it didn't happen. You know, she was in denial and in some sort of a, you know, la-la land that everything, you know, with their relationship was fine. And people would find out what really happened one day, and that it had so much to do with her wanting to run off to Mexico with the plastic surgeon she fell in love with. I mean, she just went round and round and round on everything but why she shot Selena. She didn't want to go there. And I tried. I know I was in there and went round and round and round with her, and she didn't want to answer that question directly. She was very indirect about it.
Yeah, so unfortunately, there were no new allegations or anything new that came out in this documentary that they just did on Yolanda. There was nothing new. Everything is old news, same shit. And according to Yolanda, she says she does have a secret, but that she's going to take that to her grave.
Boo.
Big eye roll. Whatever.
No, but just from that little sound clip, it sounds like she's not being accountable for what she did.
Well, no, she's not. And like the reporter said, like she still has this idea that everything is all like all fine and dandy and okay. And oh, one day I'll see her again and I'm going to hug her and tell her that I'm sorry and that I love her. And it's like, what? In what world do you exist that this is going to happen?
Yeah. No, she's pretty delusional, I feel.
Yeah, for sure. So point number five, the negotiations. While law enforcement is trying to apprehend Yolanda for the shooting of Selena, Yolanda locks herself in her truck in a 9.5-hour standoff. According to the tapes of the negotiations, she never said that it was an accident until it was suggested by Larry Young, the crisis negotiator. He says that guns can go off accidentally. After Larry suggests this, she changes her tune and cries out that it was an accident. However, when she had the gun to her head, it was cocked, but it never accidentally went off. So how did it accidentally go off with Selena? Furthermore, during the negotiations, Yolanda states that her father made me do this. He was taking me away from her. Additionally, Yolanda also states that Selena's father raped her. Her story was inconsistent and changed several times. That is a sign of a liar. I tried looking for the tapes on the negotiations, but I couldn't find the parts that I mentioned here. However, the court or the jury was able to hear them in court, but I couldn't find them.
Everything that you're saying suggests that she's lying. And I guess all those years that she's been in prison, she's had more and more time to fine-tune her lies a little bit and to get them nice and polished.
Exactly. That I was thinking the same thing, too. I'm like, she's been in there for 29 years, so she's had plenty of time.
Wasn't she supposedly going to get out on parole or something like that?
She's eligible for parole next year, but that doesn't mean that the parole board is going to approve her her release. So she would have to go in front of the parole board and state why. But I mean, if they go back and see all these things and listen to all these things, they can see that this person is just deranged, delusional, not fit to be out in the free world.
Yeah, or maybe she needs some medical care or something.
Yeah. All right. Number six, the interrogation. According to Detective Ray Rivera, and he says that he will never forget these words, when questioned why she did it, Yolanda answered back with, "Fue de coraje." In other words, it was out of rage. She tells the detectives that there was an argument about money and that Selena threatened Yolanda with getting her father involved and possibly the police. Selena turned and walked away and the gun went off. But the detective fires back, "It doesn't sound like it was an accident." And her response was, "Fue de coraje," which is, it was because of the rage she was feeling. So that's in the interrogation tapes, but I also don't have a soundbite of that. All right, point number seven, the embezzlement part. Jose, we all have heard that Selena and her family discovered that Yolanda was embezzling money from the boutique and fan club. Club members were sending in checks and money orders and never receiving their shirts and other merchandise. This is what initially led to Yolanda being under investigation and the request of missing paperwork. According to Yolanda, the company was already under and there was no money to embezzle from. There are proofs of checks being made out to Yolanda Saldivar and proof of her cashing those checks. She states that she was doing this at the behest of Selena so that she could book flights to Mexico. In another bombshell claim that Selena was having an affair with a plastic surgeon out there and was planning on running away to live over there. When Yolanda reminded Selena why there was no money left because of her claims of Selena being irresponsible with the money, allegedly, this was the reason why she was never sued or prosecuted for embezzlement. Chris states that because they didn't have definitive proof yet, she did not want to take her to court in fear of retaliation or a countersuit. But the attorney also makes a really good point that they weren't there to prove embezzlement. They were there to prove murder. What do you think?
Well, yeah, they were there to prove murder because that's what this whole case is about. It's not about her embezzlement.
Exactly.
Why was she saying that Selena was being irresponsible with the money?
So supposedly she's saying that she's making these checks out to herself so she could book these flights for her and Selena. But the checks are like $30 a piece here or there. And I'm like, is that really enough for a flight round trip for you and another person? I mean, I don't know what flights were back then, but they're going from Texas into Mexico. So
yeah, that would be a lot more than $30.
Yeah. So supposedly that's her claim of her irresponsibility, was that the money was being spent on her trips to go to Monterrey so she could visit her secret lover.
And if she's going to Monterrey to have that affair, why is she taking Yolanda? Like, why does she need a madrina for her quote unquote affair?
I don't know. That's true. Why would she need a madrina? Because I guess if I were maybe doing that, or if I were in that position, if I were to take a friend, maybe it would look less suspicious than if I were going by myself. But I mean, Selena and Chris had just married like maybe 2 years earlier. So, and not even 2 years. She went against her father's wishes to marry this man because she wanted to be with him. So how can she all of a sudden have, I don't know, when did she fall in love with this other guy? I don't know. It just doesn't make any sense to me.
No, it doesn't. And I guess I'm trying to stick like with the logic of her lies, but it's kind of hard to keep up with all of them.
Yeah, because a lot of these events happen in the last maybe 2 months of Selena's life. So it's not like, I don't know, it just doesn't make any sense to me at all whatsoever.
No, it doesn't.
All right. So last but not least, point number 8 is the other controversial topic. Abraham let Selena die because he did not allow a blood transfusion. I have mixed opinions, but before we get into our thoughts on this, let's hear a short clip about Abraham confronting this allegation.
For 26 years, I have read on social media people criticizing me that Selena died because I didn't want to give her blood, that it was a religious fanatism. And there are incorrect, completely incorrect. Selena was given blood by the doctor when she arrived at the hospital, at the emergency room after she was shot.
Mr. Quintanilla did more than just pull from memory. He also pulled court records.
I went to the courthouse and I got all the transcripts of the trial of the woman that killed my daughter.
The book A Father's Dream, My Family's Journey in Music, gives heartbreaking detail about Selena's final moments and the doctor desperate to save her life.
The doctor testified that when Selena came in, when they brought her in, she was dead already. She had bled to death. But he knew who she was, and as a last resort, he gave her blood to see if something would happen.
The book contains what Mr. Q says is the doctor's key testimony. Truth, he says, that anyone who has any questions about the life-saving efforts performed on Selena will be answered. And then again, maybe not.
Really and truly, I know that we have a lot of people there that you can show them the truth, they're still going to say, I don't believe that. And that's their prerogative, you know. They don't want to believe it, that's fine. You know, you can't change somebody's mind or their heart. I've done that because I felt that I wanted the public to know what really happened, the truth.
What do you think? I know we were having a conversation about this not too long ago. Do you still think that he denied the blood transfusion, or did this change your mind?
You know, I was trying to remember who I had this conversation with, because I didn't remember if it was with you and Antonio or if it was with coworkers. Because I remember I want to say that I remember coworkers talking about it. And that was the myth that I always understood, that the reason that she died was because they were Jehovah's Witnesses and they're not allowed to have blood transfusions because of their religion. So that's what I always believed. I guess after hearing this and hearing that the doctor, you know, under oath said that she was already dead when she arrived, it makes me think differently. But that doesn't make any sense, though, that if she was already dead, why give her a blood transfusion? That makes no sense at all.
Well, it's what he said, is that they knew, the doctor knew who she was. So as a last effort, he wanted to try anything. And he's like, let's try and give her a blood transfusion to see if anything happens. So it was just him doing anything that he thought might help, even though I think he knew in the end it wasn't going to. And I think it's his way of saying, like, I did all that I could and I could not save your daughter. But that's what I understand, too, is that when the paramedics arrived, they said that she was already, like, she was gone. So it sounds truthful. But at the same time, you know, if you believe the narrative that Abraham spins everything to make him look like the good guy or whatever, then he could have easily, you know, talked to people or bribed them into saying those things as well.
Yeah. Ultimately, if it was a religious thing, it would make him look bad because at this point, he's admitting to going against his religion. So I don't see why he would do that.
Yeah, true. Very true. And I think, I mean, there's just so many things out there. There's so much to talk about. Because I know I was having this conversation with Irma and she was saying, well, why would the doctors or the nurses come out and say, yeah, she did get a blood transfusion, but then they're going against the HIPAA laws by stating that. But if they're on court under oath, then they have to mention it. So it's not because they're just going out on TV and, hey, look at me, this is what happened. It's because they're under oath in a court of law and they're stating what happened.
Yeah. And they would be, if they're under oath, they could be convicted of perjury and the doctor could even lose his license.
Yep. All right. Last thing I want to touch base on before we go. So, you know, we've all watched the movie Selena and maybe the Netflix series Selena. And if you haven't, you should. One common theme is that Selena's dad is a bossy, machista, and angry. Like he's just a mean guy, right? So I got this clip from another podcast called Anything for Selena by Kristen Torres and Maria Garcia. Listen for yourself and you might think he's not such a bad guy after all.
Take a look, folks.
Take a look. It's I'm not mean.
Over the years, Abraham's reputation as a hard man, it stuck around. When we joined him for that spontaneous museum tour and he opened it up for a Q&A.
Who's going to be the first one to ask a question?
The first question someone asked him was why he was so mean to Selena.
Me.
All right.
Why you yell at her so much? Mr. Grumpo.
Have you ever seen me before?
No, in the movie.
Do you know me? Then why do you say that?
Because you were so mean to her.
That, no.
Yes.
No, that is a movie,
especially
dear.
Especially on the RV.
It's a movie. Fíjate, dice RV. It wasn't even an RV, it was a bus.
The bus.
Number one, that was the actor. That was not me. And that's why a lot of people that see the movie, they think I'm a bad guy. I'm a mean, that I control my children. I can't do this, que to que el otro. It ain't like that, dear. I am a father, a proud father, that had the privilege of working with my kids since they were little. And as they grew into adults, they became my friends. So don't believe the characters in the movie.
I was always under that impression, too, that he was a bit of a hard ass.
Yeah. And you know what? He has every right to be, though. I mean, he is a father and he knows that Selena is in the spotlight. And it makes sense for him to be overprotective of that, especially with the type of costumes and stuff that Selena was wearing. I could see a father doing that, but I don't think it was to the extent that he was being portrayed in the movies or in the wherever.
Oh, yeah. They embellish on that to make the story more interesting and to add conflict and everything.
Yeah. The one thing that I want to know is what does Marcela have to say about all of this? What's the mother's opinion? there's like hardly any interviews out there with the mom. And there was an interview where they asked Abraham, why is it that Marcela doesn't come out and do interviews? And Abraham replies, because she's a very sensitive person and she doesn't want to cry in front of others, which I think it sounds true to me. I mean, I think if I lost my daughter and they were constantly asking about her, I would probably cry too, you know, and I just wouldn't want to be, he was just a front person for all that.
Yeah. But also like kind of the impression that I got was that he was like profiting from like his daughter's death, because I don't think she had been dead more than like a year. They had already announced the movie and that J-Lo was going to play her and this and that. And I was like, come on, man, at least let the grass grow over the grave, you know?
Yeah, a lot of people think that he's or was or maybe still is money hungry. Well, I guess, you know, if there's a series that just came out, what, 2 or 3 years ago? I mean, he's still profiting. But I think from what I understand, that was Suzette's project and not his. So, I mean, it's like all the family. They kind of treated Selena as a cash cow, maybe. I don't know. She was the cash cow.
Yeah. I don't think that I should be judging them because I don't know them and I don't know their situation. Maybe they are trying to make the best out of a shitty situation. I think just the fact that she died so young, knowing that there was so much more that she had to give and to offer, people are still hungry for that. It's the same thing with Michael Jackson. Michael Jackson like performed for like 30 years before he died, longer probably. Prince also, he performed for decades and people are still hungry for their material. Fuck, even like Tupac and shit, you know, people are still want to hear more stuff. And I guess they're trying to make the fans happy in a way by releasing more and more things, like all the series and movies and everything.
I can see that, because during the funeral, fans were accusing the family or the wherever they were having the viewing for the fans that the casket was empty. And looking back, Abraham kind of thinks he shouldn't have done it, but he wanted to prove it wrong. He wanted to prove the fans wrong. So he allowed the casket to be open so that people could see her and pay their last respects. But then that's when people started taking pictures and it was coming out all over the place. And he goes, the last thing I wanted to do was for my daughter's corpse to be plastered all over the place. And I only did it because the fans thought that the casket was empty. So I wanted to satisfy their wishes and show them, no, look, you guys really are paying your respects to Selena. And then that ends up happening. So like he is trying to do stuff for the fans, I see, or I think.
I mean, maybe that's just who he is. He's a pleaser and he wants to please the fans. And I don't know, I feel like there's like more shit about Selena than there is about like John Lennon, you know? And supposedly like Yoko Ono was like the big villain. She was the Joker. But I don't know, I never saw her as cashing in on his death, you know? But I don't know, I guess from everything that you've presented here, I see him as just being a pleaser and just wanting to give the fans what they want.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that answers my question on if your mind or your opinion has changed from what you used to think to now about Selena, her death, her father, all that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't have anything negative to say about Selena. I obviously don't know as much about her as you do, but I mean, she always seemed like she was a really talented young woman. I mean, she was only 23. I mean, she's practically still a kid, you know?
Exactly.
So it's just so sad that she died that young. And I didn't realize that she was that young when she died, because it felt like she put out so much material that I always assumed that she was maybe like 28 or something when she died. The dad, I totally had a very negative opinion about him. I did think that he was milking her death for as much as he could, that he was kind of a mean son of a bitch just because of the way that he was portrayed. I thought that he let her die by not letting her get the blood transfusion. I had no idea about the whole casket thing, but yeah, like I guess I view him a lot different now. I mean, he was just trying to be a good dad, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
And I feel like now he's trying to do the best for what he thinks is the best for the fans who continue to want more of her.
What about Yolanda?
I've always hated that stupid bitch.
You still think she's a piece of shit?
Yeah.
She did not convince you?
No, she didn't.
Yeah, me neither. If you watch the documentary, she contradicts herself a lot. Like, she'll say one thing and then she'll say another. And I'm like, her stories aren't even adding up here. So,
yeah. And I guess I wasn't really too sure about why Selena confronted her. I thought that she confronted her because she discovered that she was embezzling money. I thought Selena went there like Rihanna, like, bitch, better have my money. Money, money. That's what I was picturing in my head. That's how I imagined that went down.
Yeah, no, not at all. Okay, I promise this is the end. I appreciate everyone who has made it this far. Let's take a moment to remember Selena Quintanilla, a trailblazing talent whose light continues to shine brightly, reminding us all to dream big, work hard, and always stay true to ourselves. And now we take a moment to recognize our super duper friends, Sophia, Natasha, Eric, Angie, and Eli.
Eli.
If you also want to be super duper and help support the show, get the episodes a week early and ad-free, get your name shouted out on the show, and receive some stickers from us periodically, check us out at patreon.com/technicallyaconversation or check the show notes.
Show notes.
It's only $2 a month or 6 cents a day. You can't even buy a Selena album for that much.
Nope. Not even downtown with the bootlegs. Let's beat at us.
No, not even with that. Yeah. And with that, we hope you enjoyed the show and join us again next week. If you're enjoying the show, leave us a review, tell a friend, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Yeah.
Follow us on the socials at GreetingsTAC, email us at GreetingsTAC@gmail.com, or leave us a voicemail at 915-317-6669 if you have anything to share with us, like the time you went to a Selena concert or met her.
That's a good one.
You know who should call in? My suegro. He got to meet her twice.
Yeah, tell him not to be shy.
Yeah.
Put our number on speed dial and have him call in.
For sure.
On next week's episode of Technically a Conversation. Imagine going to bed one night, just like any regular night, and when you wake up, you find that several days, weeks, or months have passed. For people suffering from Klein-Levin syndrome, or KLS, this is a horrifying reality. Often referred to as Sleeping Beauty syndrome, this condition often affects teenagers and young adults, and it's unknown what causes this, and there is no cure. For sufferers, it's not a restful sleep. Many are plagued with vivid dreams and hellish nightmares that they are unable to wake up from. Nothing, however, is more frustrating than the time they've missed. Many have lamented missing whole semesters of school, birthdays and holidays, and even more jarring, waking up and finding out that one of your loved ones passed away while you slept. People have missed historical events and have had to play catch-up, finding out about acts of terrorism, natural disasters, or electing a new president that happened while they slept. Today, we'll discuss the horror of the Sleeping Beauty syndrome. New episodes drop Monday. Make sure to subscribe so you never miss a show.